Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
The New Statesman.
How much would you need to be paid to be okay with racism? Apparently, for the Tories, it's £10 million. This is the New Statesman podcast. I'm Rachel Cunliffe, Associate Political Editor for the New Statesman, and I'm joined in the studio by our Senior Editor, George Eaton, and Political Correspondent, Freddie Haywood. Hello to both of you.
Hello.
Hello.
This week has been nothing short of catastrophic for Rishi Sunak. To recap, 2 weeks ago, Sunak made a big speech about how he wouldn't tolerate extremism and threats against MPs.
Threats of violence and intimidation are alien to our way of doing things. They must be resisted at all times.
Then on Monday, The Guardian reported comments attributed to the Conservatives' largest donor, Frank Hester, who was alleged to have said the most vile, racist things about Diane Abbott, including, and I quote, that she should be shot, which some people might think counts as a threat against an MP. Number 10 responded by sending ministers out on the broadcast round to call Hester's alleged comments wrong, but to stop short of calling them racist.
Clearly inappropriate.
Pretty awful.
And those are not words I would have used.
Only to later capitulate and reluctantly agree that yes, they were racist after all.
Wrong and racist, and it's right that he's apologised for that.
Cue a lot of extremely angry Tory MPs with egg on their face. Despite repeated calls for the Conservatives to return Hester's £10 million donation, Number 10 have so far said not only that they will not return it, but they would accept money from Hester again.
I don't believe that someone should be cancelled for a comment they made in the past and for which they have apologised.
So, Freddie, what's been going on?
So it has been a torrid week for the Tories, as we keep saying every single week. I think the key charge here is hypocrisy. We saw, as you said, Rishi Sunak stand up and deliver that extremism speech, much as he stood up when he first came into office and said he was going to restore professionalism, decency, probity to the Conservative Party. He failed on that front. And I think now the charge is that, well, the Tories also have extremists in their ranks when he was promising to get rid of it. So the backdrop as well is that we've had Michael Gove looking at this definition for a few months now, following the October 7th attacks and all of the rise in both anti-Muslim bigotry and anti-Semitism since then. So that's
a new definition of extremism.
Exactly. Yeah. So they've adopted this new definition to allow or help government departments, Whitehall, decide who they interact with, who they fund, who they give contracts to. So it is self-contained within Whitehall. I think there's a broader conversation and a concern that it will seep through into other debates about who is an extremist and who isn't, because obviously it's the government's an authority, and if the government says something is someone or a group is an extremist, then I think other people will latch onto that. So there is this free speech concern, and then politically we've also got this hypocrisy charge.
And the week did not get off to a great start for Sunak anyway.
No.
Even before these comments from a donor were reported, because he lost Lee Anderson to Reform.
Yes, so we've been expecting this for a while. But you got to remember, we had the budget last week.
Was that only a week ago?
Exactly. And we're supposed to be, you know, still going through that, maybe saying, oh, wow, there's a bit of a poll bounce from there. They're cutting taxes. Rishi Sunak's turned the boat around. I think we've all given up on even suggesting that was ever going to happen. But it's remarkable how quickly it's turned from them supposedly controlling the narrative to Lee Anderson jumping ship or abandoning ship to Reform.
And George, do you think Sunak has control of the narrative?
No, absolutely not. I mean, it's quite an achievement to have now spent $20 billion on personal tax cuts. That's 2p cut in the autumn statements in National Insurance, another 2p cut in the budget, and to have got nothing resembling a political reward from it. Now, I think that's partly because as we've long reported, voters care more about spending on public services than they do about tax cuts. But it's also because the Tories really struggle to define the narrative in a single week. Every week now, there is some row, some scandal, which engulfs all else. I think the problem isn't just that these keep happening. That's the nature of politics. But it's how flat-footed and inert number 10 appears. It took them more than 24 hours to condemn the Tory donor Frank Hester's racist comments. They were slow on Lee Anderson. And these are actually what a more nimble, skillful leader could turn into political opportunities. You know, Rishi Sunak could have said on Frank Hester, I'm going to take a stand. No, we're going to return the £10 million donation and we're not going to take another penny of his money because I abhor racism. And he would have been applauded across the spectrum. People would have said he looks strong. Instead, he's looked incredibly weak. And an angle to this that's largely been overlooked is that the Tories perhaps feel they simply can't afford to return that £10 million donation because part of their election strategy is outspending Labour. So quietly, they increased the national spending limit for parties during an election campaign from 19 million to 34 million. Now, if you're looking to just outgun Labour on the financial front, you can't simply say, well, we can do without that 10 million, but it leaves them looking very cynical and very shabby.
Something tells me that even though they haven't said that they won't accept future donations from Frank Hester, I can't really imagine Hester, after all of this, being like, yeah, I'll give you another one. But it is a comms failure, I think, because when those comments were reported on Monday, they were so obviously racist. It's not just that he called for a black female MP to be shot, but also said that because he didn't like her, it made him dislike all black women.
Yeah, which was couldn't be more blatant.
It couldn't be more blatant.
That's why it was so remarkable. I think maybe they were thinking, okay, well, we're the people that hate cancel culture. We never condemn the comments. We'll always stand up for freedom of speech. And then we've also got this extremism announcement where so many people are saying we'll curtail free speech in a way. So they get themselves in this twist. And I think, George, you're right. It was an opportunity to make the government's position on extremism coherent. He could have pointed back to that speech and say, now I've got an opportunity to demonstrate on it or demonstrate that I'm committed to it and either, you know, expel him or return the money or whatever it might be. On the donations, it's a really interesting point. I think there are quite a few Tory MPs who are concerned about this. And I think they recognise that the base from which the Tory party gets money has actually changed a lot in the past 10 years or so. Now it's much more entrepreneurs rather than sort of, you know, the gentlemen, the city people, the golf club chairman or whoever it might be. So they've noticed that shift as well.
Is there a risk here for Labour and for the Conservatives in future that if we start looking at all the comments that all of the donors have made, there could be some quite uncomfortable surprises? Is that something that you think that the parties are probably thinking about right now?
It's always a risk. I mean, you could think of dozens of donor rows. Look at all the trouble the Conservatives had with Lord Ashcroft, for instance, and non-dom status. It's always been a headache. And this is why
Labour have Dale Vince as well, the Extinction Rebellion figure who has said some quite controversial things.
Yeah, he's sort of one of the main backers of Just Stop Oil, which puts sort of Keir Starmer in an uncomfortable position. But I think there's a line, isn't there, between the stances that leaders might disagree with and those that are unpalatable and completely beyond the pale. And I think that's where Sunak really got himself tangled up. I think Freddie's right to suggest that some of it is wanting to look very pro-free speech and not give in to cancel culture. But Lee Anderson and Frank Hester's, they're not sort of edge cases, ones where you need to pause and think, was that really racist? Was that really Islamophobic?
No, but interestingly, the Conservatives didn't want to call what Lee Anderson said Islamophobic. They were happy to suspend the whip and say that the comments were wrong. And then we've seen this pattern where they're then pressed on, well, why are they wrong? And they repeat, well, the comments were wrong. And they won't explain what it is about them. And they don't like using those terms, Islamophobic or racist descriptors.
Yes, on Islamophobia, they prefer the term anti-Muslim hatred, which I understand. I mean, there's always been an argument from some on the left too, that it potentially illegitimizes reasonable criticism of Islam as a religion. And that's why you make the distinction between Islam and Muslims. But I don't understand why you'd want any ambiguity on the dynamic.
But they wouldn't even say that. So I think that there is a genuine concern around that and the fact that Islamophobia conflates Islam and Muslims when they're different things. But they didn't even say anti-Muslim bigotry. I mean, this was a thing. They just kept going, it's wrong, it's wrong, it's wrong. So they, you know, that can't be the reason that they didn't do so. And that's why it was such a comms failure.
After the break, we'll discuss what all this means for Labour.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's just talk about Labour's response to all this, because Keir Starmer went in very hard on this, as you would expect, at PMQs. Diane Abbott was in the chamber.
Yeah.
Diane Abbott, a Labour MP for many decades, currently not a Labour MP because she had the whip suspended almost a year ago for a frankly bizarre letter that she wrote to The Guardian where she tried to rank different forms of racism. Is this a problem for Starmer? People are now calling for her to be let back into the party. That investigation has been ongoing. He obviously was very sympathetic towards her and he went and spoke to her after PMQs about how she was feeling, but the whip hasn't been restored. So how much of this is trouble for Labour?
It is awkward. And this case, as you say, has gone on for almost a year now. And here's Labour rightly relishing in the Tories' woes. But that exchange between Diane Abbott and Keir Starmer, it's understood that she essentially said, "Can I have the whip back, please?" And he'd obviously gone over to express sympathy. But it's immediately raised that question. Now, some are suggesting there could be a compromise deal whereby Diane Abbott could have the whip returned on the condition that she doesn't stand again for Labour at the general election. I imagine Keir Starmer will say there's an independent process.
Yeah.
It's not for the leader to decide. That process has to play out. But you'd think that Labour will have to reach a resolution one way or another soon, because the longer this goes on, the easier it is for the Conservatives to turn it into a Labour split story rather than just the Tory.
There's just the practical dead end of the general election.
Yes.
So with that looming, they need to get it sorted. It's interesting, yesterday they also returned the whip to Andy McDonald, who was under investigation for comments about the pro-Palestinian protests. So that's moved quite quickly. And I think there are questions around why it's taken so long with Diane Abbott and whether why they're trying to, or if they're trying to delay it or, you know, drag it out until the election.
So those are splits, potential splits in the Labour Party. But to go back to the main theme, which is splits in the Tory party, Lee Anderson going to Reform,
yeah.
A huge amount of speculation about if anyone is going to join him. So far at the point of recording, no one has. Speculation about Sunak meeting the chairman of the 1922 committee, Sir Graham Brady. Speculation about if this makes it more likely there's going to be a May election or less likely there's going to be a May election. Is Sunak even going to be around to lead them into an election? Freddie, what do you make of the noise surrounding the Conservative leadership at the moment?
So I think there has been a slight change of attitude amongst Tory MPs. They are more angry with Sunak. They, for instance, think the Lee Anderson defection was a failure of the whip's office and of Number 10 to keep him on board. And I think they're also very frustrated with some of the communications and what ministers have been saying on the media rounds recently. So there has been a shift. I think the anger's increased. You know, they often flip between resignation and anger, and we're in an angry position at the moment. Is Sunak going to be removed before the election? I think practically that's quite tricky to do. The numbers don't seem to be there, so this isn't going to happen at the moment, but let's see. But if it did, you'd have a no confidence vote, which Sunak would probably win. And then you've probably not really got time for another one because the election's round the corner. So you're probably going to see him stay in place. The other interesting thing, which there's lots of theories, obviously, about when the election will be. And we, I don't know, I try and resist them because it gets a bit tedious sometimes. But there's one interesting theory that a Tory MP put to me, was that Number 10 will want Rishi Sunak to be in office during the election. If the disgruntlement and the agitation within the party gets so bad, maybe they'll call an election to ensure that he stays in place.
Mm. Yeah, I've heard that as well, that it is more likely that he would be pushed into calling an election than that he would be pressured into stepping down. George, what do you make of it all?
I think this continuing confusion over the election day or ambiguity points to splits within the Conservative Party. It's understood that there's a divided Number 10. Isaac Lovido is very keen on an autumn election. That's the Tories campaign director. Whereas Sunak's chief of staff, Liam Booth-Smith, can see the appeal of going early. And all of this points to the reality that the Conservatives are more than 20 points behind in the polls. Terrible position at this stage. I mean, a former Labour cabinet minister made the point to me yesterday that at this stage in the pre-97 election cycle, although everyone knew Blair was going to become PM, the polls had started to narrow.
Yeah.
At the moment, they're widening. This puts the Tories in not just a bad position, but a potentially catastrophic one. So it's natural to be looking at all possibilities and all options, considering which is the least worst one. My guess is that they will ultimately go for autumn, because there are some signs that the economy is improving. We had the GDP figures this week showing 0.2% growth in January. Now, it's quite a low bar to clear, but it does suggest that this will be a very short recession. There's the prospects of inflation falling further. They will hope for some interest rate cuts from the Bank of England to just inject the smallest feel-good factor into the economy. I think the big problem they've got is Labour will still be able to ask the Reagan question, are you better off or worse off than you were 5 years ago? And the answer will be no for most people. But if they want to fight the election on the economy, and all the signs suggest that they do, it makes sense to wait until you've got the least worst economic story to tell, rather than going to the country when Britain's still technically in a recession and inflation's still above 2% and interest rates still at 5.25%.
I think that's right. And I think the Conservative MPs who are upset with Sunak are really in a bit of a bind here. Lee Anderson has obviously gone off to Reform. Lee Anderson is a bit of a weird Conservative MP anyway, because he was a Labour councillor for many years and his party allegiance is somewhat more fluid. But there were these reports that there were 9 or 10 Conservative MPs who might be tempted to, as there always are, who might be tempted to join him. My gut instinct on that is if they were serious about it, they'd have gone with him, because you make the most powerful statements if you move en masse. And also, if they are worried about losing their seats, there aren't very many parts of the country where Reform could actually win a seat. They could make life very difficult for the Conservatives. But the idea that you could save your seat by switching to Reform, I can't really think of many places in the country where that would be a possibility. But it is a real challenge for Sunak that this party on the right that didn't have any MPs and people weren't paying that much attention to now has an MP who is sort of quite set on causing trouble. I found it quite notable that Lee Anderson chose to sit next to George Galloway in the chamber on Wednesday. Does he have a platform now to cause more trouble, as it were, or has he kind of neutralised that by not being in the party anymore?
Well, it definitely gives Reform some credibility, so they're probably going to get increased media coverage, as we've already seen. I don't think we should overstate how well known Lee Anderson is in the country.
Are we just a bit obsessed with Lee Anderson?
I think so, but you know, that is our job, so I guess. But yeah, no, he's not some party leader or someone who's been built up as much of a following as we might think. You know, he's in no way a Nigel Farage. People are saying, well, they don't need Nigel Farage because they've got Lee Anderson now. That's not the case in any way. I think there's also a question about whether he'll be able to win his seat in Ashfield. There's a strong cohort of independent candidates there as well who'd often do quite well. I think on current models, Labour looks set to win. I mean, maybe there's going to be a change because Lee Anderson does have some name recognition within his constituency. So let's see how that pans out with the campaign. But this isn't going to change the narrative of the general election, I don't think.
George, what do you make of Reform's rise again? I mean, is it possible for Reform to have two very big characters, Nigel Farage and now its only MP, Lee Anderson, and not have that cause significant internal tensions?
I think the big question is, what does Nigel Farage ultimately do? At the moment, I think he's quite enjoying, if you like, power without responsibility, where he's got his big platform at GB News. He will make strategic interventions every so often, but he doesn't have to worry about standing for Parliament again and potentially losing for an eighth time. I think he's found his niche. I mean, we put him top of our right power list last year, and I think that has aged quite well, because at the moment he is shaping debate on the right without having to get caught up in the headache of, do I stand again for Parliament, do I not? I think Reform is a headache for Sunak for you know, two big reasons. One is, it's not really obviously going to be about seats, it's going to be about votes. And at the moment, they're winning more than a fifth of 2019 Tory voters. Now, that is enough to make a difference in quite a lot of seats. And then because it's an opportunity for those on the right of the Conservative Party to put more pressure on Sunak over policy and to say, look, you need to make greater concessions to the right to win back Reform. Then on just a note on Lee Anderson and George Galloway, they've got a lot of comments, obviously them sitting next to each other and many sort of joking about this, the odd couple. In many ways, they suit each other because obviously both Brexiteers, both social conservatives, you know, George Galloway emphasises commitment to sort of traditional family values, that he's not a supporter of trans rights during the Rochdale by-election. And they're also, of course, both former Labour men and both very much associated with old Labour. So it's a sort of natural alignment. And it will be interesting to see how that plays out. Obviously, there's going to be no sort of formal political connection, but I think they're both quite enjoying their sort of status as insurgents who have proven a bit too awkward for the main parties.
Yeah, I think that's certainly true. Although I would say that George Galloway is a very experienced, proficient campaigner and is very good at going into seats and identifying exactly what the specific voter concerns and dynamics in those seats are and targeting a campaign towards that. I'm not saying Lee Anderson can't do that. I'm just saying that we haven't seen Lee Anderson do that. And it will be very interesting to see if he's able to take any of that personal brand that he's built up and apply it to Ashfield. Thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to send a question for us to answer in our weekly You Ask Us episode, go to newstatesman.com/YouAskUs. Or if you're listening on Spotify, you can just scroll down and leave a reply on the episode page. You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast with me, Rachel Cunliffe, and my colleagues, George Eaton and Freddie Hayward. Follow us on your podcast app to make sure you get new episodes as soon as they're released. You can also watch video from this podcast on our YouTube channel. Just search YouTube for The New Statesman. This episode was produced by Chris Stone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.